At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Tom Frenchie screams towards Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Better get out there, crab digging. Bloody crab digging.
What have we here?
Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, NBs, this is the Eat Sleep Elite podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. I am the Digital Duke, also known as the Digital Phantom, also known as the Lisan Al-Gaib, the voice of the outer world. And with me is the Shai-Lud himself, the Shai-Lud of the Immortal Dreamscape, the fucking gnarly one himself. Mr. Charlie, how are you today, sir?
Absolutely wonderful. AEW, we're back, baby!
AEW has...
Yes, back every week.
Chopped off the head of the toddler in its crib. We are now locked the fuck in.
Shout out House of the Dragon.
Everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Is this a smaller segment I didn't see? No. Swerve's not decapitating babies yet. But, hey, House of the Dragon Season 3, we're going to need something, right? So, Swerve cuts off Nick Wayne's head in front of Christian. A son for a son. Yeah, it's good stuff. So yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of stuff to talk about this week, so we'll probably spend more time on some stuff, less time on others. We are season 4, episode 4. It was a hot week this week in wrestling. We have some more Contract Mania stuff, more injury updates. We got some G1 Climax participants that were announced. Some words. I also don't know if you have it in there, but I saw that AJ Styles is going to be wrestling at Noah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So shout out AJ Styles. Still one of my favorites. I don't love his matches now as much, but I still think like the last like year of his career, he'll do like a Bryan Danielson and be like, oh yeah, I remember how to wrestle again. Not that they either of them ever forgot, but like, oh yeah, I got like a year left. Fuck it. Okay. Yeah. Tetsuya Naito. Let's have a 5-star match, you know, like, or something like that, you know, like
let them cook.
Exactly. And then we also have our orders of business to take care of. So whatever podcast platform you happen to be listening to this on, be that Apple, Google, whatever podcast platform, make sure you hit that follow and or subscribe button. And you also hit the 5-star frog splash review. Anyway, and I don't know what the fuck that was, but you know what we really need? We need that fucking soundbite that fucking Tar and Mike used as. Also Matt Bane Duke on Twitter, that's BaneDuke, at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A for Mr. Charlie. And make sure you check out Eat Sleep Elite Fantasy. We have just recorded our House of the Dragon review, as you heard me intimate at the start of the podcast with my little joke about decapitated children. But that being said, that show is mostly focused on television, movies, books, those kinds of reviews. So if you're more interested in that kind of content from us, make sure you go check that out. The link tree has the links at Eat Sleep Elite on Twitter. You can follow us there, send us tweets, suggestions. You can tell us to go fuck ourselves. You can tell us that our wrestling opinions suck and we deserve to be thrown into a fiery volcano so that our ashes can be blown into the wind. So there will be nothing for our descendants to bury.
All acceptable.
Yes. That being said, I guess that's, you know, without my insane ramblings, because, you know, of course, you know, there was some great action this week. So, you know, I wrote some crazy, insane, fucking ludicrous, like, sounds like some excerpts from fucking Game of Thrones in my notes. Yeah. So we'll get into all that. But we got favorites this week, Charlie, and I believe you're going first, my guy.
Yeah, so no one's going to be surprised at my favorite. Will Ospreay, Rey Fénix, main event, AEW Dynamite for the AEW International title. I mean, come on.
I mean, this is a match, I think, back in, like, 2021 when Will was just showing up at shows. I think this is a match we were like, well, we have to have that match at some point, of course.
Two of the most athletic motherfuckers in the game today. And that is not a joke. They did a little Will Ospreay ricochet at the beginning.
I mean, let's just keep it above. He's probably the best wrestler in Mexico. I think it's not hard to argue that Fénix is at least in the top five. Maybe not like better than like the guys that are like the favorites over there. Like, what's the one we always get? Mystico, right?
Vikingo, yeah.
But then like there are guys that are like old as fuck that are like also mega legends over there, right? But let's young wrestlers that are in their prime. Probably Phoenix is in the top five in Mexico, so we'll just say he's the best wrestler in Mexico in AEW.
I believe he's won that award from Figure Four Wrestling before. So
well, there you go. Early, so yeah. He's probably pretty close. I'm sure Meltzer would consider him the best. You know what I mean? Or one of the best. So not that his opinion is the end all be all, but obviously the guy's been covering wrestling longer than anybody, so probably knows the shit at this point. But that being said. And going up against arguably the best wrestler in the world, the best wrestler from the UK ever, probably, and probably the best wrestler in Japanese history, if we're being honest, you know, and that's going to ruffle some Four Pillar fans, but he beat Misawa's records, so it's kind of hard to argue at this point, you know. But I didn't think he was going. I thought Meltzer would like do like what other, you know, people that give out awards like that have done in the past, where they're like, even though I know I think in my mind he's better, like I would give him more awards than I gave the other guy. I also acknowledge that the way I've, you know, decide what matches are good and bad has changed over the years. And so I'm gonna, cause like that's something I've heard Meltzer talk about before, is like he gave Undertaker versus, you know, Shawn Michaels infamously 4.75 stars, right? But it's like, I bet if he evaluated that match now, it would probably get the 5 stars. But the reality of the situation is we only think that because it didn't get it. So it's like, you know, if it had gotten 5 stars, people would be like bitching that Kenny Omega has 2 matches that have, you know, more than 5 stars. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's never been about whether or not that match had the right amount of stars. It's all about your level of enjoyment with the match and like whether or not it corresponds.
Yeah.
Because everyone wants every match they like to be rated 4 stars or 5 stars or more. But the reality is he's going to not do that for every match. And you're going to think there are some matches that deserve it that he calls shit. And it's like, you know, that's just the nature of opinions. You're not always going to agree with them. But I will say this, though, not to completely derail your entire favorite here. But I think when you put two guys like that against each other, I often try to like find the right way to put this, Charlie. When you put those two guys in the ring together on TV, I mean, it's not the same thing as if you got this in like a pay-per-view match. Like if you gave these guys 30 minutes on a pay-per-view, it would be a match of the year contender. But what they can do in, like, I don't know, what did this get, 15 or something like that, 20? Like, it was still really good. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah, it was like 15, barely over 15. And yeah, it was just, you knew what you were getting yourself into when you see this match on paper. And in my opinion, Rey Fénix, when he gets these spots, he doesn't, I don't believe Rey Fénix underdelivers. And I thought they lived up to the hype. I mean, like, it's not as good as if it was a pay-per-view. And I fundamentally would agree with that. But there was some great stuff. I mean, turning that octopus hold into the crucifix bomb. That's one of those moments that I'm thinking about. And then post-match with Swerve jumping in the ring and Ospreay getting his hands on the title. We had double title Ospreay there for a minute. That looked fucking sick. Swerve pretty much saying, yeah, you're lucky we're friends or I would have put you in the grave. Swerve is such a badass.
I'm kind of chill with them, like, not taking this title off of him if they want to see that image again. Because that image looked pretty good. Him with two championships on his shoulder there, bud.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
Imagine, like, if he was going back to the UK, defending the title. We got the footage on Dynamite, and then on Collision, he was flying it every week. And that was how he got to do, like, an even lighter schedule. Because he's just wrestling in the UK, so he could just go from home to wherever the venue is. You know what I mean? And I would love that. And I also feel like, I mean... Didn't you kind of think in your head, like, similar to Pac, because he's going to be in the UK a bunch anyway, that they were just going to have him do that again? Do you think it's that they just don't have a good relationship with one of those promotions right now? I thought they had a good relationship with, it's RevPro, right, that they usually work with over there, right? So.
Oh, yeah, I think Ospreay's just done doing that for now. Ospreay is solely AEW right now.
But I want to see him moving into Tokyo for the championship.
Yeah. Hey, could do some crazy shit. Who knows what they'll do when they're over there, right? Ospreay hit a midair hidden blade. He stared down Swerve, told him it's his house, hit a Swerve stomp and a hidden blade to win.
My man hit an air assassination?
Yep. This is my house. So really, really good stuff. And yeah, I look forward to, I'm assuming, our main event at Forbidden Door with Will Ospreay Swerve. It's feeling like a big match. It's feeling like a really big match, to be honest. So
doesn't it feel like the closer we get to it, the more there's a chance that Will actually wins it? Like,
yeah, I'm really going back and forth on that. I don't want him to win it yet, but at the same time, it's Will Ospreay. I wouldn't be upset if he did, right?
I want that to happen, but I also don't want, like, I also don't want them to miss the moment with Will. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the moment with Will be here, no pun intended, in December. It'll be here in November. I almost I mean, my fantasy booking brain here. Hold on. Where's Batista? We need him to, of course, now I can't.
Give me what I want.
Give me what I want. Yeah, Batista helps us out. Fantasy booking brain, it's going. Will Ospreay is unsuccessful. We have Swerve Strickland face Bryan Danielson at All In, who is successful. And then we do Danielson, Will Ospreay at the end of the year. And I think you could have those three as our, if our champions this year are Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, Bryan Danielson, and Will Ospreay. I mean, I don't think we're going to have another year-long title reign. We just don't need it. You really don't. I mean, no one, if Swerve lost the thing in 2 weeks, I don't think anyone's going to say it was a failure of a title reign. He's been an awesome champion. They'll say it was short, and it would have been short.
But it does feel like it would be wrong with how much we built up Swerve's title. I mean, it was literally the entirety of his focus from when
it would feel short if he lost it at Forbidden Door. But if he lost it at All In, it'd be about 100 days title reign. I think that'd be perfectly fine. I mean, Moxley had it for 60. And his last title reign.
Yeah.
And it's like, that 60 felt like forever because it was so well done. You know, mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, I that's my fantasy booking brain clicking in full gear, but it'd be at full gear. That being said, what was your favorite this week? Because this wasn't the only good match. We had a really, really good week of wrestling.
Yeah, we did. I mentioned that at the top. It was a lot of people got a lot of opportunities this week too, I noticed, which I'm really happy about because like you just never know. Like, it's always like a bit of a crapshoot who's going to get opportunities and who's not. And like, I'll give you an example. Alex Windsor. I really, really liked her in the random Rampage match they threw her on.
Holy shit, she's good.
And I mean, of course, it's Will Ospreay's fucking, are they married or is it just his girlfriend?
It's his girlfriend, but speaking of her, well, so I don't lose this on my brain.
Go ahead.
I was kind of reviewing, like, someone was talking about Alex Windsor before the match on Rampage. And I didn't realize how high praise she is in British wrestling fans.
They know I'm not kidding. She's like a legit, like, I forget. She was dating somebody else more significant, and I don't remember who it was.
Like, yeah, I saw a significant amount of people call her the best women's wrestler that's British. Like, ever.
I mean, that's cap because we know about Jamie Hayter, but I mean, you know, but whatever.
I'm saying that, but look at how.
But I mean, she might be more well known than Hayter. Like, Hayter may have been one of the people that she came up against may have been Alex Windsor, right? So that could.
Yeah, so she's been doing this shit since 2010.
I'm a little surprised she had never been given the opportunity. I wonder if she didn't know the right people or something like that, or if it's just harder for UK women's wrestlers to get noticed. Probably the latter, I'm guessing. Like, she's pretty good, and she's also, and I'm not trying to be sexist here, got that. She's not like a butterface. Like, she would look good on TV against some of these. Well, would she look as good as like Bianca Belair? No, but I mean, like, she's not gonna, nobody looks as good as some of the women that WWE, like, WWE almost has like a standard that you have to meet. You know what I mean? But I feel like she meets it. You know what I mean? Like,
no, she,
you know what
she
almost kind of reminds me of her vibe. You know what just fucking hit me? She reminds me of how I used to, when I would look at China in the ring. That's what she reminds me of. Maybe not physically, right? But like, the way, like, not like I'm saying like physical in terms of like muscularity, because obviously China was like a fucking bodybuilder, you know? But like, I'm not saying Alex Windsor doesn't look like a bodybuilder. I'm trying to dance around this because I wanted to try and not be disrespectful. I always try to do this when we talk about people in this way, because I'm not trying to be rude, obviously. But I feel like that could have been the vibe that they went with, and I feel like it will work. So I'm a little surprised. I wonder if it's just like timing, you know, things just didn't work out.
Yeah, she's always been one of those people that was. I mean, clearly, when I saw multiple people saying that, like, unintentionally, I was like, okay, so she's been in the UK for a long time fucking crushing it. And yeah,
they should clean Aminata her. They should say, okay, we like you, you're established, you know what you're doing, you're good. I don't know if she should be immediately, like, in the Ring of Honor, but I wouldn't mind her on Ring of Honor, but I think she probably would rather, you know, be, if she's going to fly out with Will for TV, that she probably would rather be on actual TV, which makes sense. You know what I mean? But you know, I really want to see more from her. I think she's gotten like 5 opportunities in the last couple of weeks, and that's basically what they were doing with Aminata before they fully kicked into full gear with her. So I'm hoping we're getting a similar thing here, because I think, one, it would be good for Will's mental health for his wife to be over there with him all the time. You know, and obviously it would make it more difficult for them to do that because they have a child, you know. That's a thing, you know, but like, obviously you can make that work. And I'm sure the fans would enjoy seeing her. I haven't really noticed if the fans are behind her yet or not.
No, they are.
But if they gave her some solo opportunities, I'm sure they would be. You know what I mean? So
she'll win them at a heartbeat.
And I think Will vicariously, not that she can't get it on her own, but I think vicariously by being Will's partner, he'll probably help her a lot. But you know, like,
that's how a lot of people have been introduced to her. So it makes sense.
But anyway, let's continue. Yeah. I guess I'll get into my favorite now. I just kind of went around the corner there for like no reason on that little tangent, but whatever. That's this podcast. We have Wheeler to Claudio Castagnoli, Brian Danielson, John Moxley taking on Leo Rush, Rocky Romero, and TMDK's Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste. And first of all, a lot of bodies, but good bodies. People that know what they're doing, people that know how to use the time that they're given. And this is the opening match for setting the tone for a show that was going to have some really, really good wrestling on it and some really dramatic action. So I think that this set the table, which, you know, is of course covered with the tablecloth. Anyway, I don't even know if you could hear what I was trying to say there, but fucking tablecloth. Leo is the tablecloth. No, Leo is the leg of the table. Sorry. Anyway, you can't stand without Leo. Anyway,
give me some more Leo Rush and Danielson.
Yeah, that would be a fun match there, bud. Yeah, fucking, oh my god, I love my notes. Nigel, gold medalist Brian Hayter, god damn it. And
he used
Brian.
To be a vegan, but he couldn't stop eating brie.
God, hey, yo, damn Nigel. It. I was on one on this collision, bro. He honestly was. There was another
thing. I mean, look at the vibes Claudio had. Dude. Like, he's just vibing out, dude. I was like, okay.
I mean, it's got to be great for Claudio because he doesn't have to cut that many promos, right? He just goes out, wrestles. Everyone loves the way he wrestles. He doesn't get booed for not winning shit that it's out of his control, you know what I mean? And he wins most of his matches. I mean, he can't be upset. He's probably making good money right now, too. Like, you know, he's been a world champion. Within 3 months of him being in the company, he was a world champion. He cannot be unhappy. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and I wonder if Claudio
even if
has
it was the
point.
Bullshit Ring of Honor, it's whatever. It was because Ring of Honor obviously didn't mean shit at the time, but it's still a world championship. And
he debuted in a hot angle and it hasn't let up. I wonder if he
and not taking anything away from Athena, but I will give Claudio credit. He did do a good job before she had established what she was going to do over there in Ring of Honor of setting a standard in Ring of Honor. I think that while I think she ended up taking the reins of while he was still champion, I think no one knew that she was going to step up the way that she did, right? We knew she was good. We knew she was having good matches because when she'd won the title, right? But we didn't know she was going to be that Athena yet. And I think Claudio honestly took a back seat once she really stepped up. And so I do think that's interesting, but I also think that's just him being smart. Like, he's like, well, I'm not the fucking star here, obviously, because look at what she's doing, but... let's see what else do I have here. Oh my god, Moxley's hot tag in this match was insane. The crowd was literally on fire. I mean, there was literally, I think they had to call the fire department. They were literally in flames when Moxley got tagged in. And then at one point he tagged back in Claudio, it wasn't a tag in for Claudio. So we had our classic, you know, everybody hitting their, not necessarily finishes, but just like, you know, signature moves, knocking people down. They hit a powder, they roll out of the ring. And it ended with Rocky. I forget what he did to the previous person before him. I can't exactly remember, but he sent them out and then Claudio steps in the ring and Rocky's just like, shit. And you know, he goes for a little spin ski there, bud. And I don't know if it was just because Rocky's short, but he just was getting absolutely spun in circles. It was absurd. I don't like Leo eating the pin, but you know, I guess when you leave the company, that's what happens, you know? And
I think it's a politics pin, to be honest.
No, yeah, 100%.
They're not going to want their tag champs to be pinned.
100%.
And then Rocky's the VP. It winds up being Leo there.
Yeah. So you know, I get it. You know what I mean?
I think it's. I agree with you. I would have just pinned Rocky.
And a lot of times Rocky would be the guy that eats the pin in this match, but they got Leo there. So, and Leo, it doesn't hurt him in New Japan at all to lose an AEW match. You know what I mean? Although, given what they ended up deciding to do with him, it is a little weird, but maybe that's the thing that sets him down this path.
You know, he's the only junior in the match. I guess Rocky technically is, but.
Right, but Rocky gets treated like a light heavyweight or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
You know, there could be multiple reasons.
Yeah, and then I guess I'll just talk about the little Mox promo. He just calls out Naito, says, "You're a legend, bro, but the legend ends. I'm burying you, bitch." Basically, you know, he's gonna put him 6 feet under. And
how are you feeling about this match at Forbidden Door right now?
What, him versus Naito?
Are you? Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of a lot of other matches I would have for Moxley, you know? Like, okay. I mean, Shingo would be good, you know? But, I, you know, like, who else? Like, I'm just trying to think. Like, a lot of the guys.
I would just do him a shooter. I'm surprised they're not doing this yet. But I get having, I get it being Naito. Because I think Naito's going to win. As of today, my gut's telling me Naito's winning this thing.
So when Christ, nope, I just had it for a second. What the fuck? Hiroshi Tanahashi became president of New Japan, right? One of the first things he did was put the title on Naito, clearly because he believed that Naito was a big enough star to carry the company. I think he was right about that. I think that when he did that, I think the title and the company gained a little bit more respect back that they had lost since they lost all those people, you know? And so I think, given that, I think it makes sense that they would pick Naito. I don't know if it's who I would go with. I agree with you. I think him versus Shooter would be good.
To Shingo. I think Shingo should be their ace now.
No, Shingo is probably the best wrestler in their company right now. Like,
I mean, when Will Ospreay got hurt, Shingo was the first one to put some respect on that world championship, the new world championship. And
I wish there was more belief in Taichi because he's actually good enough to be in this spot, you know, but
he is. He's just so much older now compared to those young guys.
Oh, I know.
He's so much older.
I know, but
like, I think he's nearing 50. I'm not even kidding.
That's actually kind of crazy for how good he still is. That's nuts. Give me him versus daddy ass.
I lied. He's 44, but still. Former All Japan guy, right?
Yeah.
But no, I bring that up because I got to tell you, as of right now, I'm not that excited for this match. And I wish I could tell you why. I really don't.
Can I just tell you, how many matches from this card do we actually even know?
We got 7 right now.
And how many of them are actually singles matches that feature both New Japan and AEW stars?
So we got, John Moxley versus Naito, that's 1. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Orange Cassidy, that's 2. Now, I don't know if this is a technicality, but Toni Storm versus Mina, because she's Stardom, Bushiroad. I mean, I think technically that would count. But Mercedes versus Stephanie, that's CMLL. And then Jeff Cobb's going to be facing someone in AEW. So that's only 4 right now. And the others are all like mixed matches. I mean, Shingo Takagi entering the Owen Hart, I'm assuming he's going to be a singles match on the show. So we'll have to see where that goes. But I don't know what it is about this match.
I mean, I'm not hyped for it, but I'm sure it'll be at least a manage. I mean, like, it's kind of like how we had muted expectations for Jack Perry versus Okada, right?
Sonata.
Or sorry, Sonata, yeah. Yep. Okada. Okada faced somebody else that night. But that was Okada versus Bryan, right? Yeah. I do wish we had more of that. But I mean, I don't know. Again, like, I don't know. Other than the matches we mentioned, which clearly they don't have enough faith in, you know, to put those on the main event and stuff like that. I just don't know. I do wish we had more flavor. I guess I was exaggerating. There is enough, but like, I don't know. I think probably closer to the show, like in a couple of weeks.
We're missing a little meat on the card. Yeah. No, we definitely are.
We'll fill that in over the next week or so, you know, like hopefully.
Yeah. Like I want to get some New Japan guys in this TNT tart, like met thing. Like, come on. That's a fucking ladder match, dude. That's an opportunity for some of these guys that they're not going to get in New Japan. Yeah. Let's jump into our news here. We'll kick off our news with the poll results this week, where you came up with a poll last week of Andrade. Did Andrade have the best collision singles run in 2023? This is the most overwhelming poll result we have had yet. There was 1 vote for no across both sites, being that Twitter at Eat Sleep Elite or Spotify, if you're able to vote, if you're watching on Spotify. Andrade with the overwhelming yes. I mean, I really didn't think about it until you mentioned it. But then after some thought, yeah, he did have the best singles run. I'm with you. So good poll there. That was pretty cool.
This is one of those things that I noticed. I mean, you know, I will review Collision every week. And when somebody's on my sheet every week, because they're not just having a match, but it's also really good. I mean, that shows the trust that they had in Andrade to be able to just go out there and have a really good match with just about anybody on the card. And it shows the lack of faith they have in the guy in the WWE. And that pisses me off.
Yeah, he didn't have his first match until March, where he defeated Apollo Crews in 3 minutes. 3 weeks later, he defeats Giovanni Vinci in 7 minutes. He has the tag match at WrestleMania. It was pretty underwhelming, if we're being completely honest. All anyone remembers is the guys from the Eagles doing their thing. And then, yeah, he kind of disappears until he's in this speed tournament and he beats Ricochet for the speed title.
They literally cost them Ricochet, bro. How could he?
Yeah, the speed title is under 3 minute matches, I believe. So it's all on Twitter. I mean, he beat Carl Anderson in this tournament in 46 seconds.
Do we actually think that there's a chance that Ricochet walks through the Forbidden Door?
Not a Forbidden Door.
Could, but imagine if he did, though. That'd be
if
insane.
He did, I mean, they've kept that shit under wraps, and it's fucking golden. I mean, seriously, that would be awesome. But I really hope they figure it out with Andrade. And I hope they figure it out with Dragon Lee. He got pinned by Carlito last night. I mean, like, dude, Carlito is so far beyond washed, and Dragon Lee is genuinely a blue chip prospect. He's not even 30 years old yet. I mean, this guy was doing batshit crazy stuff on AEW at like 27. And
this is a guy that WWE probably had interest in, but was not interested enough that he was able to go work AEW, and they were just like, fine. And he did so much on AEW in the like few months that we saw him there.
Yep.
That they were like, assign this guy. You know what I mean? Like, that should tell you that if they viewed him as a big enough threat that like if he was out there doing that on AEW every week. And let's be real, that could have been one of those signings Triple H made because he just didn't want the competition to have them, whether he was planning on using them or not. It sounds shitty, but I could see somebody doing that, you know?
It's just, he is so talented that it, I mean, we often have heard about when we are covering WWE every week, they're always looking for the next Rey Mysterio. He's in their lap and they're too blind to see it. Anyways, moving on. We have more contract stuff. We have some other stuff in the news here. And if there's anything I'm forgetting that is on top of your head, I'll wish you bump in because I might not have it all. Okay, we got some contract mania here.
Zach Clayton.
Apologies if that just ear-fucked everyone because I did not have it turned down. Someone just got scared shitless. My bad. Jeff Hardy.
Should have worn your brown pants to the podcast.
Jeff Hardy is signed with TNA.
Tits and ass wrestling.
I like those odds.
No shocker here. He's going to go be with Matt Hardy. Just like with Santana. Just like with Matt Hardy. Just like with Frankie Kazarian. He's walking into TNA. He's at the top of the card. He's fine. Good for Jeff. At least we got a couple of those Darby Allin
matches. Let's keep it a buck. They'll probably give Jeff another world title run.
They could. They easily could. I didn't see the angle he returned in, but I know Matt Hardy was in the main event so of the last pay-per-view. We have an update on Megan Bain. She's been long rumored to AEW.
See the return of total nonstop deletion.
They probably already did. But Megan Bain has been rumored to AEW. She was reportedly signed. There was something in late 2022 announcing she had been signed and sent to Stardom on an excursion. Tony Khan referred to her as an AEW wrestler at one of the press junkets last year. It is now June. FIFO reported she is currently a free agent. So no one really knows what's going on with her other than maybe they have something inked. They're just waiting to bring her in, and we've been covering this with Camille as well. Are they just maybe waiting for Jamie Hayter to come back? Like, is there some court? Are they waiting for Britt Baker?
Yeah, maybe
to
this
come
is
back?
Literally going to be Jamie's faction when she returns.
Like, or it could be Brits. Like, both Camille and Megan Bain are big. Like, fucking legit powerhouses. I don't know. Biffle said they're engaged in contract talks. I have no idea what this means, but look, they've put more emphasis on the women's division this year than AEW ever has. Ever. They feel important, finally. In the first time since we've been covering it, they've been important for the last 3 months. 3 to 4 months, if we're being real. I might say the best feud right now is Deonna versus Tony, or versus Thunder Rosa. Not for a title. It's got legit heat in my eyes, and they've had three pretty decent to fun matches. I like the match this week.
Actually, we should give Deonna and Thunder some credit there, because like we've been arguing for the last 3 years that they should have these secondary feuds going on. The last one that we really had was Hikaru Shida versus Serena Deeb, and that was like in 2021, I think. Like, and we've had a few sporadic ones here and there, like, you know, technically Chris Statlander versus Willow Nightingale is still a thing.
Think about it. that's another feud ongoing right now. We have multiple non-title feuds.
We have three women's feuds right now. And really four if you consider that Mariah May stuff is really kind of separate from the Mina Shirakawa stuff. And yes, it's connected, but it's only...
And Mercedes is doing a Danielson thing where she's taking on anyone and everyone.
So, like, this only can happen because of the women like Thunder and Deonna that have been making it possible. Because they've been proving that the women can do everything that the men can in terms of feuds.
Feels like they're finally getting some fucking respect.
Something we bitched about for goddamn literally years on this podcast. You know, Tony Khan may have seen the light.
Look what Holly Cameron's doing.
Who took Tony Khan's virginity backstage? Damn it! I want to know who you are so we can give you a medal.
We got a couple more contracts that have been let us know to be expiring, and it's tag team. They're cousins. Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo, they're both expiring this summer. Could that mean June? Could that mean July? Could that mean August? Unknown. Could they resign? They very well could. These guys are really talented. Angel Garza is – I think Angel Garza is unbelievable. And I've always thought Humberto was solid. I've always thought he was solid, but I'm a big fan of Angel Garza, as I believe he's now just known as Angel. So – And then kind of a big one here, Shane Haste. His New Japan contract is expiring this month. He's the current IWGP Tag and Strong Openweight Tag Champion. He's wrestled this week on AEW. We've just talked about him in your favorite. So, yeah, keep an eye out for Shane Haste because that is someone that New Japan needs to keep around.
I expect he'll get re-signed since his other guys. I'm surprised they're on separate contracts. That's really surprising to me, the two of them.
Well, Shane joined much later. Nichols was kind of in because Shane – was in Retribution in WWE when Nichols got cut. So he stayed around for a lot longer. But what keeps me nervous about these guys is we're about to talk about it right now. Shane is not in the G1. That could be telling. Speaking of the G1, let's get into it, huh? The G1 has finally done it. They've put the numbers way, way down. We're back to 20 participants. Two blocks. It just got so muddied, it was unenjoyable. I mean, really. So, let's talk Block A. Tetsuya Naito. Shota Umino. Shingo Takagi. I mean, come on. Sonata. Great O'Conn. Zack Sabre Jr. Gabe Kidd. Evil. From Pro Wrestling Noah. Jake Lee. And then the to-be-announced. So, the to-be-announced is a tournament between Tomohiro Ishii, Yoshihashi, Callum Newman, Kenta, Chase Owens, and Yujiro Takahashi. In the B block, that A block's really good, by the way, but yeah, from Noah, Jake Lee this year. The B block, Hiroki Goto, El Fantasmo, Yoda Tsuji, Jeff Cobb, Hanare, David Finley, Ren Narita, Yuya Uemura, Inosuke Takeshita, representing AEW and
D.
And at the B block tournament, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Toru Yano, Oleg Bolton, Satoshi Kojima, Taichi, and TJP. That's a stiff B-block tournament that they're doing right now.
Wait, they flipped his name around. It's Oleg Bolton now?
Yeah. Bolton, Oleg's his real name. Bolton is, versa. Either way, on thing I'm reading right now, it's...
They might have just changed it. It does actually sound better that way, so...
Yeah, Oleg Bolton is his real name, so maybe they...
Maybe they're like, Bolton Oleg just sounds weird.
Yeah.
Maybe somebody literally just typed it wrong in the fucking name generator or like the nameplate and they were like, fuck, we should fix this. Like,
but I mean, we're getting Takeshita versus.
Those blocks both sound insane. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure we'll tune into a good amount of that this year.
Opening night, Takeshita is facing Yoda Tsuji. I mean, they know what they're doing. I've said for a long time, Takeshita, he might not be an ace in AEW.
My young Japanese boy versus their young Japanese boy.
But Takeshita, I could very well see a world where he's the ace in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And the fact that he's wrestling there, look, he's very, very loyal to DDT. But I would not be unbelievably shocked if this is what leads to it in two years.
Move on us, I feel. I mean, they're going to have this guy fucking win the thing and then win the world title. And then... We're going to be like, oops, when his contract comes up. Like, he's going to wait for his AEW deal to run out and then sign with New Japan and become the ace of New Japan. Like, straight up. Like,
there's a world where he is very well the ace of New Japan because he is that fucking special. And he's still not even 30. Okay.
That would be Tony Khan's second major bag fumble that also resulted in a boon for New Japan, because he did it with Leo and he might do it with Konosuke. He straight up might do it. And he gave Konosuke way more than he ever did Leo, you know?
R.D. Evans resigned from his position at TNA Wrestling last month. He was recording to a report. He's working backstage for AEW at Collision on Saturday. And it's now being reported that he is just, now he's working for AEW. So he worked on backstage segments throughout the weekend. He was in TNA since October 2019. He was in WWE Creative from 2016. Up until a famous backstage incident at the 2019 Hall of Fame ceremony, where Vince McMahon was yelling at Evans after Bret Hart mentioned McMahon by name during his speech. Evans quit on the spot. So, good for him. That's cool, though. So, you know, hey, whenever there's new members of Creative Team,
I swear, Vince McMahon was just born to be an asshole. I swear to God. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Fucking quit on the spot. Good for him.
I'm sorry, because I will say this. I will stand on business on this, dude, because whether or not you like Vince McMahon, a lot of people in the wrestling business view him as the guy that gave him the only opportunities that they ever really were able to do anything with and kept the wrestling business alive for a long time when people didn't like, when people just wanted to wrestle and there was nowhere else to wrestle. So, like, I may hate Vince McMahon, but, like, the fact that he doesn't want people acknowledge, and I get it, it's supposed to be all humble and stuff like that, but to me, it's just like, let people give you the praise for something that you did that is good in their lives. There's nothing wrong with that. You can be humble and still accept your grace when it's given to you. I don't know. I always bother me about Vince. That's to me when the modesty rings is hollow, because, like, I can tell you're just doing it for the appearance, because you should be willing to take, I don't know. No one's that humble. I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
Unless you're like a Tibetan monk or something like that, who's literally spent their entire life trying to fucking be Zen. You know what I mean? Like, unless you're doing that, you're not that guy, pal. You're not that guy.
So, that gets pretty cool. And last two little things.
I mean, let's be real. That's what Roosh basically is saying to MJF lately. You're not that guy, pal. You're not that guy.
Kira Hogan has suffered a shoulder injury.
Damage.
Is out of action for the for the foreseeable future.
Dude, what the fuck? I swear to God, she never gets opportunities and then gets hurt. What the fuck? Like,
the shoulder injury appeared to happen against Ashley D'Ambois in the match in April, and she hasn't wrestled since, but now we know why. So it could be a pretty bad one. Wishing the best for Kiera Hogan. She's so fucking good.
I maintain that she still had one of the best fucking matches in Athena's title reign and fucking has not gotten any fucking opportunities because of it. Still, really. I get it. Injuries happen, but that sucks, man, because I feel like she's one of those ones that it felt like they were about to do something with. You know what I mean? Like,
it really does. And then our last little bit of news here. There's a documentary on AEW star Swerve Strickland in the works. This was posted from Deadline, where if you guys know what Deadline is, I mean, this is the big dog. It's being produced by the twin comedy duo, the Lucas Brothers, who did Judas and the Black Messiah. And this is going to be about Swerve Strickland and rapper Flash Garments. So, really cool. It's going to be a documentary about how they met and where their life has gone. And that's the kind of thing that could be fucking huge. So, cool for Swerve. It's a big deal. He's got good people working on it. That being said, let's get into the wrestling today, huh? We've got some wrestling to talk about.
Oh, yeah, there, buddy.
Duke's going to steer the wheel here as you're going to be talking about some Ring of Con.
Ring of Con. Ring of Con. Ring of Con. Sorry. This goes fucking full.
Ring of Con.
The maestro of mayhem. Sorry. Matthew Roy is fucking goat. How do you fucking pronounce that son of a bitch's last name? Could you have a fucking... All right, pause. Could... Our boy have a fucking harder to pronounce last name as a commentator on TNA. I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think it's possible. Fucking even Schiavone fucking Schiavone fucking, at least I can read that. You know what I mean? Like, fuck. All right. We opened up. By the way, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on Ring of Honor this week. There wasn't much there. So I'll just, but there was some good stuff on there. So I'll acknowledge it. But that being said, we opened up with some Billy Starks taking on Sandra Moon. Who I like, then got sacrificed to the Moon Goddess by Billy, who, you know, of course, the Moon Goddess being Athena, you know? I mean, come on. Athena, they had the Moon. It was, you know, she was called Ember Moon, but there was, like, actually, like, you know, a Red Moon. But, like, you know, whatever. It doesn't really... the moon. You know, whatever. Anyway, so, you know, whatever. Anyway, Nick Camerato and Jacoby Watts took on Shane Taylor Promotions, and Shane hopped on the mic in the mid-match. Nick Camerato and Jacoby Watts are just losing a lot lately, just about everybody. I'm sure they're going to go somewhere with this. And every time Jacoby Watts goes, praise be to he, and he is me, it pops me. I'm not going to lie. So, but apparently Ring of Honor is now confirmed to be a Christian Minecraft server, Charlie. I don't know how this happened, but you won't be, you know, you won't be blaspheming on Ring of Honor without getting lambasted for it by Rick Bone and Caprice. Indeed. Johnny TV and Taya Valkyrie were backstage, and they called out Queen Aminata, so I guess Taya Valkyrie will be taking on Queen Aminata, probably will be losing to Queen Aminata, and Queen Aminata will then take on Athena. Red Velvet took on Viva Van. Again, I like Viva Van, keep bringing her back. Red's tuning up for Billy right now, who I described as Billy off the pity, because she's off the fucking pill, bro. She has lost it. Speaking of lost it, Lance Archer and the Righteous took on Top Flight and Action Andretti and the Dark Order and the Infantry and Dolphin Castle. What a fucking Jesus Christ, so many bodies in this match. Oh my God. Somebody was described as a pure unit in this match. I don't remember who it was. I don't know who it was, but that's awesome. We had the package. Not much to say here. Just a lot of people all over the place in this match. I don't even remember who won. I don't even care. I'm sure it was the good guys, but I honestly, Charlie, I genuinely don't care who won that fucking multi-man insanity. No thanks. So Marina Shafir, Diamante, and Alex Winder took on Lady Frost, Layla Hirsch, and Abaddon. Again, same problem as the last match, like just a lot of bodies in there. Less so, but just a lot of people. And Alex Winder gets another win here. So good stuff there. A lot of women on Ring of Honor this week because we follow this up immediately with Trish Adora and Harley Cameron. Harley, Charlie, has not had a bad match yet. So And I suspect
she's taking her time.
Yes.
And she's really, even her promos. I'm not the biggest fan of her beating Trish Adora, but look, Harley's a signed talent, I guess, right? At the end of the day, she's signed to AEW. It's true. You know?
And Trish doesn't really get as much respect as she should sometimes. So, you know, but I also suspect that Harley, given like a pay-per-view match, would probably still have more to offer for us. So I think based on the one match we saw where she actually did, you know, try and have like a match with Mariah May, I think she could probably do that on a consistent basis. So, but there was still good stuff in this match. All right, Charlie, we had maybe one of my new favorite random fucking absolutely never heard of these guys, but awesome tag teams ever. The Wolf Zaddies. Bad Dude Tito and some guy with the last name Cabrera. Fucking, I loved this name. That the Wolf Zaddies, I'm in. They took on the Undisputed Kingdom in a Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championship Proving Ground match. They actually did a little something here. It wasn't a yawn from the fucking Undisputed boys this week. I'll keep it a buck. When they do good shit, I will give them praise. This was, they actually had a match here with these guys. I'm proud of them.
Yeah.
Good work, boys. And I actually think these two Ring of Honors, that was your main event, by the way, were back-to-back solid weeks. I don't think there was anything hateful on either, and I think they used the time well. I still don't like that we had no, Athena was, like, nowhere to be seen, you know? But, I mean, hey, you can't always have everything you want. So, was there anything you wanted to talk about from Ring of Honor there, Charlie? It was pretty standard week, but also, you know, some good stuff.
Yeah, pretty standard. I mean, at the Four Corner Survival, there was a lot of meat in the match, but there was some good chaos, I guess, right? At the end of the day, some pretty decent chaos.
I mean, you know, I don't mind about the multi-team things. Like, they just, it's confusing to me. I don't like it that much, but yeah.
But yeah, other than that, yeah, people taking good advantage of their time, right? All right, we jump into AEW Dynamite, where we opened with Swerve pretty much getting his intro promo in, saying, asking if everyone's ready for Forbidden Door. Okada walks out, pretty much says, hey, Swerve, fuck you. Whose house is it? Okada's house now, bitch. And, yeah, they just go on to talk about they're setting up blood and guts.
Bro, Okada can't call people bitches like that in America. He's going to get shot.
So they're setting that up, and then...
Oh, my kidding. Okada has a gun. Man was definitely the leader of the Yakuza. That's why he had to leave.
They set up Jack Perry right away for his TNT title.
He jumped Tony Khan in. That's what that was. You thought it was a storyline. That was them jumping Tony Khan into the Yakuza.
Imagine. This was a bit of a slower-paced match, but it was all about Jack showing off his threatening presence that he likes to bring. And he took a fucking bump on the concrete, of course, because it's Jack Perry. He hit a low blow, charged the knee up for the win, and flipped off Rhodes while fucking, you know, pinning him. So It's pretty cool. Jack Perry is in the TNT title match at Forbidden Door.
Over under real glass in the ladder match.
I'd set the over under at like 75% and probably still take the over. It's happening. Real glass. Real fucking glass.
Find me a river.
Whoosh. Defeats Dion Russman into the Black and Brave School in Davenport. So pretty cool. Seth Rollins school. And yeah. Roosh kicked his ass. Roosh, you got a feel for these enhancement talents. They look who
that
they're
facing. Argument went in that school where he was like, no, I want to go to AEW. And he was like, no, you don't.
They're like, so who am I facing? I can't wait to see who I'm wrestling. Whoosh. No. No. He's going to beat the fuck out of me.
All right.
MJF's music hit. Wait, crowd exploded.
Before MJF came out, though. I told you I had a few things written in my notes this week. Some of the squashes. Here we go. Roosh sends a poor soul into the depths of pain and torment. He hastens their demise and sends them from this world, fearing for their mortality. They drink damnation.
Okay, that was pretty good.
I got another one later, too.
There's a promo setting up a match with Mark Briscoe, Orange Cassidy, and Kyle O'Reilly. And I think Mark Briscoe just started shooting. He started going nuts. It popped Kyle O'Reilly mid-promo. The crowd was fucking barking for him. I mean, they wanted it. So, yeah. Mark Briscoe promo caught fire there. Into the match. Roderick Strong, Kyle Fletcher, and Konosuke Takeshita with the Kingdom and Don Callis. Defeat Orange Cassidy, Mark Briscoe, and Kyle O'Reilly. So, our new group had Roderick Strong in the match instead of Trent Beretta. But, you know, at least Trent was out there. I get that part. I was a little confused about Roddy being the other guy.
We got a Kyle off, bro.
Yeah, a little Kyle action going on. Fletcher got the pile driver, pinned Mark Briscoe. So, our ROH television champion pinned the world champion. Is that is as intended? Question mark?
I mean, it should be.
We'll see.
Hey, you know, if Kyle loses that title, he's going to need something to do. And I'm going to keep it a buck with you. Mark Briscoe as champion, dead in the water.
Beretta beat the crap out of Cassidy. Fletcher and Takeshita beat the dog That's shit out of Briscoe.
Have Mark Briscoe get beat by Trent Beretta. That would be ballsy.
Next time she comes screaming in her business, they'll drag her to the ER. But Statlander said about Nightingale. Renee was back with stage with Ray Phoenix, getting pumped up for the match. Video package for Shingo Takagi is shown. He is entering the Owen Hart. Yeah. That's the Shingo fucking vibe music right there. Christopher Daniels is backstage. Tony Khan made it official. Young Bucks and Okada will compete in eliminator matches. Bucks will have no outside interference in their match, as will Okada. We'll find out.
I'm going to keep saying.
We never found out who their opponents will be.
Listen, I've said this a million times about wrestling. It happened with Nigel McGuinness, and it will happen again eventually. And it already happened with Daddy Magic on commentary. Sometimes somebody who you think, because of what they do, they would be perfect as a wrestler, because that's what they do is they wrestle, or they'd be perfect as this. There is no reason why in the latter half of Christopher Daniels' career, he can't be the on-screen personality for AEW and be remembered fondly for that. Because so far, he's one of the only authority figures in wrestling I've ever seen that wasn't completely hated by a portion of the fan base. It's insane. And it's because we all love Christopher Daniels, and no one's going to hate Christopher Daniels being the EVP. And let's be honest, if they did actually make him an EVP, it would kind of make sense because he does talent relations anyway. So, I actually think they probably will just kill it after this storyline, but I do think he could actually maintain this role, and it would be a great position for him to be in, and he could still wrestle. There's no reason why he can't. So, you know, like,
yeah. Samoa Joe and Hook defeat the Premier Athletes. Shibata was at the side. They beat the crap out of him. And yeah, commentary put over really strong.
Shibata's running cameras now. How hard up for AEW is AEW for money right now that they got Shibata running the camera?
Paying him overtime. Fuck it. Video package for Stephanie Vaquer. Again, the women's division feeling important more and more. And then we get Mercedes Moné. Zooksies. There it is. To retain the TBS title. I'd never seen Zooksies. She was awesome.
I don't know.
She was fucking awesome. There was like a fake out pile driver that she hit on Mercedes. I thought she might have fucking killed her. Underhook lung blower is what it was called. There it is. Yeah, that was awesome. And the money maker for the victory. Really fun little match here. I mean, seriously, that was cool. I was unfamiliar with her game, and I became a fan. So it's like Hechicero past couple months ago.
Okay, you know, so
he pops up.
I want to throw something at you with Mercedes here, and this is not a criticism, but I will say, I mean, I guess it kind of is. So all of these matches have been great, right? But I don't think any of the matches since she's won the title have been memorable. How do we fix that?
Okay. This is pay-per-view matches. I mean, really.
Okay.
I mean, that's just what it'll end up being. I mean, I agree. I don't really remember anything about the Sky Blue match. Oh, well, time will tell with this one, right?
Because, like, but I thought, and the reason why I bring it up, because we spent a lot of time talking about how phenomenal Orange Cassidy's title reign was, and then we got to the end of it, and we couldn't really find the matches we thought we were going to be able to find. Like, wow, there was like a handful, and we thought throughout the whole time every match was like that, because that's what it felt like. So can this get to that point where we don't notice the quality anymore? Not that any of those matches that we thought were good were not, but there was just nothing about them that was like, that made them stand out from the pack of 30 matches that he had. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
Will we reach that point with this where it starts to not matter anymore? Because I think because of that title reign, I noticed this now. Because I thought for sure we'd have 30 just bangers in a row, but there was like 15 matches in there that I didn't even remember. You know what I mean? So it's like, I fear that for this title reign, because while I do think Orange Cassidy is way more established now, I think everyone expected more from this title reign just because of the nature of Mercedes being out for a year after coming back and teasing AEW, but we didn't really know. And we thought maybe that year we'd get her at Forbidden Door or something like that. Or we didn't really know what to expect, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just something I thought I'd throw out there. And you know what? Since I haven't come up with it yet, this is a good poll. And it's another one of those probably gimme polls where people will probably all vote one way, but I'm still interested to see what people think. Have they gotten Mercedes off to the right start in AEW?
Okay. That seems pretty good poll.
Because, you know, people may not agree with me. I would say if I had to give my answer, I would probably say I think they have, but I'm still skeptical, as I always am, until I see where it goes.
Yeah. Seems like a pretty good poll. Yeah, I definitely do think they have gotten her off to the right start. With winning the TBS title, making that TBS title feel so important right now. Adding to the lineage, and I haven't disliked the two matches. I mean, she's had three matches now. I think they've all been pretty good. I really liked this match this week. I thought it was pretty fun. And yeah, that double arm underhook lung blower was fucking nuts. That was like perfect. Zuxi, good for her. And yeah, the Fakir match. I got a really good feeling about that match.
Yeah, I don't think I have any qualms about what she's going to do on pay-per-view.
Mm.
I just think, I don't know. I just think I will probably be able to put this more into words if this issue continues for me. But at this point, I don't have any issues. I think it'll be fine. There is a little bit of pause in me, and I don't know why. And maybe it'll be interesting over the next few weeks leading up to the pay-per-view and post-pay-per-view and so on. To examine that and see why it was I was feeling this way and look back. I wish I had a way to like remind myself to bring this up later, but yeah, I don't know. It is, I just, you know, I gotta be honest with people when I feel a certain way, you know what I mean? That's kind of the whole thing of this podcast, you know? So anyway, let's move on.
We get a video package on Mina Shirakawa, kind of talking about her friendship with Mariah May and Club Venus.
Talking about Barkin, really, brother.
Really well produced video package. I mean, they are making these women feel like stars, and it's putting that emphasis on that it's been missing for years now. So really cool to see. Paquette has a little interview. She reminds Storm of her match on Rampage against Alex Windsor this week. Private Party guest on TV.
Why does Mariah May get to lay on the chests of both of these women?
It should have been me. I am the learning tree. Chris Jericho is having TV time. Private Party come out. Big Bill introduces him as the Socrates of pro wrestling. Chris Jericho cut a promo on Korn. Brian Keith said, if you want to grow lame-ass Korn, you better respect Chris Jericho. Bring out Private Party.
Why is Brian Keith working so well in this?
I don't know. I don't know. Big Bill's dancing to their music as they point out a sign that's making fun of Big Bill. And Jericho goes, folks, if you're going to do shots, you better have a designated driver. Why? I mean, come on. Jericho puts them over, says one thing they haven't been doing is winning matches. Ouch. Said he's been trained by the great Stu Hart, so he's going to show them how to wrestle properly and show them how to climb to the top rope. So they're like, yeah, go ahead, show us. And then they beat the crap out of him, send the, you know, Swanton Shooting Star Press. And it was actually really funny because as they're climbing, they're trying to, they're like being very, they're fucking being assholes about it, showing off the lesson. It was pretty good. It was pretty fucking good.
Hey, so. I got to give you some credit here. Like, what was it, 3 weeks ago on the podcast, we had the back-to-back weeks of Isaiah Cassidy getting bitched. And I was like, wow, I'm surprised that, because then maybe he won something or something. I don't even remember. There was something. It was something weird. And I was like, yeah, it's weird. Cause to me, he's dead in the water right now because they haven't done anything with him. And you were like, actually, I think they're setting him up for something big. And they're feuding with Jericho. I mean, that's...
That's really big.
There's not that much bigger than that outside of them actually being in the tag title scene, which, let's keep it a buck, they beat these guys at the pay-per-view. They're probably facing the Young Bucks.
Yeah. We got a Bang Bang Gang backstage talking about their match against House of Black this weekend. Collision Cowboys will kick their asses. Daniel Garcia defeats Nick Camarado. The most important thing about this match was both MJF and Will Ospreay were watching in the back. Garcia stonks going up.
Good to see you.
It's what it's starting to feel like.
I hope so.
My name is Daniel Garcia.
So it's always good to see him getting featured. I mean, look, he's probably headlining the show in Buffalo, so maybe him, Ospreay, for that title could be an option.
Could be.
Renee asked Ospreay his thoughts on Garcia. Said he can't wrap his head around that right now with everything he's got going on. Main event next. Contract to give. And yeah.
He's like, bro, I've got business.
Pack is backstage. Cuts a promo about he's tired of fucking losing. He enters the Owen Hart, where he will most likely lose. And we get the Blood and Guts graphic at a big arena in Nashville, Tennessee. So they're probably planning. They're thinking that they're going to move some fucking fat tickets for that. So that should be pretty cool for Blood and Guts. Always down for that. We jump into Rampage, where we kick off with Timeless Toni Storm defeating Alex Windsor. And this was the match that I think I'm officially all in on Alex Windsor. Mm. I hate to say it. I think she outworked our champ. Could have just been a bad day for the champ. Could have been the way they booked the match. I don't know, but she was the clear far better wrestler in this match. And that shocked me. Again, I think it might have been the way that they booked it.
It could be.
But again, because Toni Storm was mainly just kind of doing, you know, butt stuff and, you know, other little things. Yeah. I mean, tell me when I'm telling lies, pal. You had Harley Cameron cut a cool promo about everyone blaring themselves for the women's Owen Hart. She declared Saraya.
Oh.
Kind of fitting for the way that their dynamic is.
Saraya might win. Straight up.
She could.
She won last year at Wembley, so being in that match again wouldn't be that surprising.
Thunder Rosa, Deonna Purrazzo hype package, putting, again, more emphasis on that match. Cage of Agony in the most forgettable match you'll ever fucking see. I Jesus Christ. That match went like 3 minutes, too. What the... Is it just me? Or does that triple slam that they do, it looks fucking weak, man.
Nah, I said that from the jump. That move sucks.
That's such a weak move. Like, the third guy doesn't even, like, put his hands... Like, dude, it's so weak. It's such a weak move for Brian Cage, Bishop Khan, who's built like a Greek god, and Toa Leona, who's a fucking beast. Yeah, whatever.
Whatever.
Jota Umino defeats Rocky Romero.
Azuka, Rocky Romero.
I'll be straight up. Rocky's music hit. I wasn't vibing with the match. I was like, fuck, I really don't feel like fucking watching Rocky after that. He put on a good little match here with Shota. I was in. And Shooter to hit the Mercedes dance. Shooter's so good. He's so enjoyable. The crowd got into him too. They didn't really recognize who he was. And he kind of won him over during the match.
Which kind of disappoints me, because to me, as someone who watches, you know, AEW, to me, if Shooter feels like one of our guys, because he's Moxley's boy. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like,
Didn't resonate with Iowa, which is very surprising. It was.
You're telling me an Iowa crowd didn't like random Japanese guy number 11 to them? Like, you know, like.
I know, right? Yeah. But he hit the dance and they popped, so we got that going. They announced Hechicero versus Dalton Castle. Satnam Singh defeats Rosario Grillo in 20 seconds.
Here's the other one that I had written down.
No, here we go.
Satnam Singh gets a sacrificial lamb to allow him to gain sustenance from the marrow he stripped from the bones of the unlucky bastard who is deemed a sinner.
Yes. Is Satnam Singh the mountain from Game of Thrones?
He might be.
Scary time. After the match, Jay Lethal grabbed the mic, predicted he would beat his opponent in even less time. They send out Pac. Pac beats his ass. Pretty okay match for what these guys could have had. I actually thought it could have been much better, but you know, they had some nice little exchanges, and we ended Rampage on a high note with Pac getting a nice win, setting himself up for the Owen, which the Owens, the Owen is looking nice, nicer and nicer by the day. So,
and so far, we haven't had any participants announced on either side that I'm like, fuck, like there's actually, it's going to actually be, and they're all people that haven't won before or haven't won a championship yet for the most part, or haven't won recently. Like, pretty much all, it's going to result in some drama in the matches, which is what I was hoping for.
Yeah. So that being said, it's time for some Collision, where you've already talked about the opening match, but you didn't talk. We didn't talk about the cold open.
Sorry. 1 year anniversary of Collision here. Christ, I can't believe this show's been going for a year now. My God, I've reviewed 51 episodes of this show. Well, actually, they skipped a few weeks, so I guess not, but you know, whatever. But anyway, Christian Cage opened us up and calls the show Christian Cage's Collision. So what? I guess he booked the show, I guess? I don't know. But
I'll tell you what. If it did become his show this year, at the end of the year here, and it's like where we
find... Who's as big of a star as CM Punk? And we thought in our head Bryan Danielson, but then he ended up taking on like kind of a role for all the shows.
It's really the Bang Bang Gang show still. Truly. But I mean, there's
that's
more
just from like a... If we're
on
like,
the show.
In the way that CM Punk wasn't on every week, but kind of felt like the locker room leader of Collision, I feel like you could do that with Christian Cage, and he's, you know, respected and experienced enough that people can follow by his example and probably do pretty well with their careers. So I would be okay with it.
People care about the patriarchy, straight up. They care about it. So
yeah, they do. And I think when it first formed, we were like, oh God, is this going to just be like another Don Callis family, another whatever the fuck else we had at the time, like that wasn't very good, you know, like. And it didn't turn out to be that way, so that's good. We got a video package for MJF versus Roosh, which I think when this package came up was right after we got the announcement that, that was earlier in the week, but they're basically hammering home the commercial, no commercial interruption thing. I mean, I'll keep it a buck with you. I'm excited by that. I don't know that it's going to matter because the first match is generally 15 to 20 anyway, and we don't usually get a commercial. So I'm a little confused by why they made that distinction. Maybe they're going to give them 30 minutes. Maybe that's what it is.
It must be something with ratings. They must be trying to pop up.
They could be giving them genuinely more time.
Yeah. They've probably done an analysis.
Hey, look, watch them give them the first hour. Watch it happen. Watch them give them the... Because we've had stuff announced, but I mean, who knows? They could like literally give them 30, 40 minutes and then give the rest of the show to everything else, you know? So I don't know, but
yeah.
Tony Schiavone introduced the Acclaimed, who roasted the EVPs, and then a Cutlet tried to find them, and Christopher Daniels, and I'll just read what I wrote in my notes, stopped the steal. He reversed the fines.
Oh no,
I am going to hell. I'm just going to move on from that because that was basically what happened. Christopher Daniels just came out and reversed the decisions. And did he do something else here? I can't remember. I think he did. I can't remember. I don't really care. Straight up. I really don't. It's like, I'll be honest with you. The Acclaimed, are they going to be the ones that get the title shot going out of the pay-per-view? Is that what we're setting up for here?
I think we've discussed this
when they're this dead in the water. I'm just being honest. Like, you know,
I think
like,
there's some Acclaimed fatigue. And we've mentioned this before. I think it's just no one's excited for the Acclaimed right now. It's just fatigue. That's all. It's fatigue. I think you give them some time off, people will be back into it. But I mean, we didn't get our Orange Cassidy time off. We didn't get our Jericho time off. And it feels like sometimes you're not going to get that time off until you're injured. That's a whole nother fucking box of Oreos.
Hey, listen, I put a poll out on this podcast that asked if AEW wrestlers worked themselves too hard, and people said no. So I'm just letting you guys know that I saw this coming. You know, not necessarily the Acclaimed thing, but like the idea that these people—it's
fatigue.
They get overexposed, and I think that leads to them trying extra hard, which sometimes I think because it's a fucking dangerous sport leads to injuries. And I'm not saying they don't know what they're doing because it just happens sometimes. It's not like they're trying too hard and that results in them getting injured. But when you're trying to perform at the highest level all the time, look at Will Ospreay, look at Kenny Omega, look at Okada. They've all had periods of their careers where they've been out because they got hurt, because they go so hard every time. And they had to adjust their styles to be the top guy so that they didn't get out all the time like that. So, you know, so my fear with AEW wrestlers is that they all want to be that top guy, but there's only so much TV time and so many slots to be in that place that you sometimes have to do a lot of crazy shit just to get people. I mean, think about how difficult it is to just get the crowd's attention when you're new in AEW, you know, let alone trying to build into like an actual star, like, and then take that stardom and propel that into a championship win or something like that. It's not as easy as it is when the machine is behind you in WWE, because the machine being behind you in AEW doesn't always work in your favor. Sometimes it works against you in the case of Jade, you know, like, so. And I think a lot of people really liked Jade, but I don't feel like I was the only one that felt the way I did about some of the stuff with her time in AEW. You know, like, maybe I am, but, like, I don't think I am. Especially with what I see now. What I find hilarious, did you see this shit with her the other day on Twitter where they were, like, trying to blame AEW for her not being trained to wrestle properly? Love it, you know?
Of course. Of course.
Anyway, we'll move on. We got a sick little match with Deonna Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa, and a no DQ clusterfuck is what I described it as.
That table spot with Thunder Rosa was awesome.
We had Nigel McGuinness hitting the Tony's tits or Mina's melons line.
Yo, that fucking pop Shavon, he didn't know what to do.
He didn't know what to say. Fucking Plunderfest here. Actually, there was a cool little spot where they had like a table like sort of half set up, and there was Deonna in the corner with a trash can on her head, and Rosa like did like a fucking like Assassin's Creed type move and ran up the table and then like drop kicked the trash can. So that was like pretty metal.
I was also saying, I've never seen that move. No. I thought that was neat.
Yeah, they did something that I'm not surprised that the AEW, I mean, they've done this before and they'll continue to do it. They come up with these innovative spots for these street fights because obviously they think differently than other people that have participated in street fights prior. So, you know, there's still room there. A lot of people will think like the ladder match, the no DQ match, everything's been done in them. And to an extent, it has been, but there's always new stuff, new twists, new angles. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about what Athena can do with just a set of stairs. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, and that's why I think one of the reasons why I realized how good Athena was, because like, if you can make the stairs probably the least interesting ringside weapon interesting, then you're doing something good, you know? Because not many people can do that, you know? But give me Big Show in a stairs match again, please. Anyway, we had a sick one-year recap of the last, like, year, the best show in AEW television. So many great memories in there. Should we have had a championship change like we did this time last year on Collision? Or do we keep that special because it was the first ever?
Yeah, keep it special. Unless you want to do some fucking, you know, I don't even know what title you change right now. Titles feel a little locked up. It's probably a good thing.
No, you're probably right. It's something that crossed my mind while I was watching it. All right, Dalton Castle with some beefy boys, Charlie. All right, and I'm just going to say it. If the Outrunners become part of the boys, I'm in. Though I don't think that's going to happen. I think this was just somebody wanted to pop the fucking people in the back. But hey.
I am so with it, though. It worked.
It did. It worked. They fit. Especially with them flexing in the background, bro. It was like, all right. And now think about it like this. If Dalton turns heel, those are his heaters. You know what I mean? Like, easy. Anyway.
Yeah.
It would be a little shit if the boys got replaced by some random Outrunner dudes, though. That would be fucked. But hey, you know, whatever. But yeah, so he took on Hechicero. These are the kind of matches I want Dalton to be having, to be honest with you. You put him against some of the best wrestlers in the world, and you're going to get some magic. He bleeds charisma, and versus a technical wrestler or a powerhouse, the crowd's going to start like nutting in their pants for how much they want Dalton to win. Like, you know, like, we got Dalton assaulted after the bell because Hechicero is still aligned with Cage of Agony, so they helped him with the beatdown after the bell because I believe Bishop and Toa were out there with him. And then Gio Garcia and Papa Magic made the save. So there's that. I don't know if there's going to be like any alliance there. I doubt it. But Dalton, they'll probably get like some sort of trios match or something. I'm guessing maybe like an eight man with all these guys or something like that. I'm not sure who. Yeah, no. Actually, with Danny Magic, it's the eighth. Yeah, no. That probably could maybe happen on Collision next week, though. I don't know if we will necessarily have it, but we'll see. But yeah, I mean, did you have anything you wanted to add about that? I mean, I thought Hechicero looked good. Dalton Castle looked phenomenal as always. You know.
Yeah, it's nice to see Dalton Castle getting a match on Collision and getting a match in AEW. It's just nice to see him featured.
Sucks that he always has to like lose it to be able to get on TV, though, I will say.
Yeah. I mean, maybe him and Daniel Garcia, there could be something in the future there. I think that they could play off of each other, like, you know, very serious Daniel Garcia and, you know, the Peacock. Maybe that could be something a little fun to play with. Maybe. We'll see where that goes. Easily could be a match for next week where Dalton gets a win back.
It could be.
If he teams up with Danny.
100%. Oh, yeah. Oh, the next segment I'm actually really excited to talk about. Action Andretti and Top Flight were backstage. They were talking about Dante's match with Lee Moriarty later in the show. talking about how he was, you know, going to win and stuff. And Charlie, Leo Rush made an appearance. Acknowledged the history between them.
Yeah. All lore is lore in AEW, right?
And said, nice to meet you, to Darius, because he technically never met Darius. And was technically Darius' replacement for a little bit. I think there's something there, Charlie. If they can convince New Japan to let this guy cook a little bit in our company, I think we could end up with Leo Rush back in AEW.
Please. I loved, if people are new here, absolutely, when we first started the show, probably our favorite little group was the Leo Rush, Dante Martin, Matt Sydal, and they would sometimes feature in Mike Sydal as well. It was this little group, and it was so much fun. And now, at the time, I didn't even know Darius Martin existed, but now you have him. You have Action Andretti. Matt Sydal's a call away. I mean, you know, bring these guys in.
100%.
Let's fucking do it. Let's make a legit faction out of people that want, that are hungry. They want it more.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I hope they do something.
Or it could be a one-off, but at least they acknowledged it. You know?
I hope it's not just a...
I'm glad they acknowledged
it. I'm glad they acknowledged it. I hope it's not just a them saying something backstage. I hope there's at least a match out of it between Darius and Leo or something like that, because that feels like appropriate at the very least. You can't just leave it at that. You have to do some kind of match or something.
Maybe he has his back at Forbidden Door.
Could be.
Maybe Dante wins the TNT. Hold on. Maybe Dante wins the TNT title because it's fucking Leo helping him. I don't know.
We can't turn Dante heel. No.
God, I want Dante to fucking be a single star. I know that they don't see him as that yet. Maybe one day.
Perhaps when the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. No, it's not that bad. But yeah, this is good stuff there. I like when they acknowledge it. Christian Cage's Father's Day celebration, Charlie.
Yes.
Luchasaurus painted him a nice painting, brother.
And he fucking no-sold it.
Son of a bitch. That son of a bitch, that fucking pissant Nick Wayne gave him a card and then he acted like he was the second coming of Jesus. God fucking damn it. That Nick Wayne prick's gonna get what's coming to him. Swerve's breaking into his house again. No.
Brilliant.
This time is a baby face. Basically, the whole point of this is Christian Cage bigs himself up and then tells Tony Khan straight up, this is my company now, bitch. So, yeah. So, I guess Christian...
That's a cool development, though.
Yeah. So, I'm taking this as that everybody that's, like, as powerful and influential as Christian Cage right now is trying to, because they see the weakness that the EVPs have exposed, trying to take, like... They're trying to fill the power vacuum, if you will, that they think exists. So I think that maybe we'll get another Team AEW match or something. We already got the challenge for Blood and Guts, right? So.
Yeah, Team AEW versus the Elite. Elite are so easy to sell for those matches.
100%. So, you know, so because Blood and Guts is happening, I think that'll probably be when, if we're in like the, unless we're at the Empire Strikes Back moment, but unless we're, if we're on the back end, then we could see Team AEW pick up a win here to set up for some kind of blow off at maybe at All In. Actually, that would actually be a great place to do Team AEW versus Team EVP, like as like some sort of like, you know, finale to it. That would be a great place because it's like their WrestleMania. So, you know, like I'm in. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
I'm all in.
Color me in.
We had the Card Blade and the Bang Bang Gage. The Bang Bang Gang. Bullet Club Gold. By the way, have you noticed they completely have changed their name over from Bullet Club Gold to the Bang Bang Gang at this point? Have you noticed that? Anyway.
Yeah, it must be marketing.
It must be.
Copyright, you know.
Something.
Maybe AEW didn't want to split the profits anymore.
Could be. And they're basically like, yeah, because Jay's not here, it's not a title match. Fair enough. So when they take on House of Black, it'll be non-title. Leo Moriarty took on Dante Martin. When pillars collide, how will the foundation of AEW be shaken forever? And it was for a spot in the TNT Championship ladder match. Man, they did a lot of really great wrestling stuff, and Dante hit his high-flying shit. It was awesome. And they actually made this feel like it could go either way, Charlie. I'm so in favor of picking two people who would both be great additions to the match and just having them have a great match to create, like, super, like, extra drama that wouldn't be there. And it's kind of like what I was saying about the matches being set up for the Owen. It's a similar thing, you know what I mean? Like, we're setting up matches that I wouldn't care who wins. I just want to see one of them advance to see if one of them wins the tournament because they're both people that I would like to see win. So this is an example of that. And I think it helped to get this match along even further. And both of these guys know how to sell. And that helped them a ton.
So nice to see Dante get a singles win in this 100%. Capacity.
And then we had our STP beatdown. And part of the reason why I might agree with you that Leo's probably not getting something real here with this redux of the storyline, when he made the save, he did not play any music. And I mean, that doesn't mean anything. They do that sometimes. But the way he walked out, it just felt like he knew that he wasn't really there to make the save, you know, like.
Yeah.
He was just there because they set it up earlier in the show. And it just, it didn't even seem like the air was just out of his fucking, like the wind was out of his sails when he walked out. Like,
here's the thing. We know Tony cares about crowd reaction, and he was giving Leo chance. You gotta hope that if they, I think.
And Tony Khan has stated, and he could just be bullshitting, but, and I think I've heard Leo say, I've heard them both say that the way things ended, they neither of them liked it. You know what I mean? Like, neither of them wanted it to go that way, but it's just the way things went. So I would think that there is a chance of mending fences there, but the reality is, like, you know, Leo walked away when they were probably about to put him in a pretty big spot. So I do think there's probably at least a little bit of resentment there from Tony Khan, you know, like, even if he doesn't let that affect his booking decisions, it's got to play in somehow, you know, like.
Yeah, at a certain point, it's one of those things that this will separate Tony Khan from just being another booker, is if he can put his pride aside. And if he brings Leo Rush in, back in, I mean, there's things like that, you know, it's going to be what separates him from others in the past. But this is 3 AEW matches now in a row since he's wrestled in New Japan, for example. So,
yeah. And up until like literally a few weeks ago, we hadn't seen anything of the guy, so, you know.
He hasn't wrestled New Japan since October, it looks like, other than the New Japan Strong matches. Yeah.
Maybe so. That's why he's making a move toward AEW right now, because he knows they don't want to use him over there because they don't have another Super Juniors tournament for, like, a long time, you know, so.
Yeah, and he wasn't even in this one.
Yeah, so, you know, he knows that he's probably not going to get used over there, that they got what they wanted out of him, and they don't really care to use him much anymore, so he could be trying to make a career change, who knows. I still put in my notes, will they reunite? I don't know. I genuinely don't.
I don't know.
Even if they keep him.
Hope springs eternal, right?
I suppose. Hikaru Shida had a video package. She entered the Owen Hart tournament, Charlie.
We're not missing with this tournament right now.
It's going to cook. I mean, that's always been, I think, our favorite part of the year. I think those are going to be our two favorite parts of the year. The Owen Cup and the Continental Classic every year are going to be when just the every week just cooks after cooks. Because weeks can sometimes be fine where there's like 3 or 4 good matches, but everything else is just fine. Those weeks, they seem to, everybody, even on their promos, seems to step up. I'm really excited for the Owen. It's going to be.
To reference a previous poll we did.
Okay.
Are we going to see last year's winner on the men's side enter? Are we going to see Ricky Starks enter this tournament? Who knows? Well, who knows if he's even wrestling again in this company?
Who knows?
But we still got 3 spots to go on the women's and 5 to go on the men's.
Yeah, so we got options.
With that being. With Hikaru Shida, we now got Statlander, Nightingale, Mariah May, Saraya, and Hikaru Shida. So 3 more spots.
God, the field is just insane.
Let's get Serena Deeb, and let's get Purrazzo and Thunder Rosa. Let's fill it out. Let's get all 8.
Yeah, I wish my.
I think that's your easy
my
finish
dad
to
is
it all.
Screaming in the background, and we're like 3 matches away from the end here. I'm gonna try and get through this. All right, Undisputed Kingdom and Roderick Strong join the commentary. I do agree. By the way, like I think the tournaments are gonna kick ass. Do we want to do like guesses about who's going to win once we get the full brackets? Like,
yeah, we'll do predictions for the tournament. Okay. Well, we can do each match.
100%. Cool. I'm down. Yeah, because we'll have to like keep track of who says what, who wins what, because we'll probably have different answers to some of them, and so we'll have to like do different matches for like the rounds, obviously. But anyway, yeah. For unless you're saying each match as we get them like announced, that's as winners are announced or whatever. But either way, it's fine. Kyle O'Reilly was taking on Anthony Henry. I love the opportunity for Henry here. A lot, like I said this week, a lot of people got opportunities that I really like. So you know. I'm sitting here happy. And I wrote in my notes, I know these two are about to light up my screen. They did just that. And the finish was actually kind of metal here, Charlie. It was a Falcon Arrow armbar or something like that. Like, that was nuts. Like, he did, like, a Falcon Arrow into an armbar. That was pretty wild. We got a little preview for Dynamite for next week. Looks like a pretty nice card. And then the main event of the evening, which, unless this was just a storyline, which maybe it was, but I'm hoping that it was, but we'll get into it. Well, I'll just say it now. It appeared Buddy Matthews got injured during the match and had to go to the back. No idea. Could have just been a story.
Yeah.
Hopefully it was, because that would be fucking tragic for House of Black right now, because they've been on a great run again, you know? Like, always what happens with a lot of these groups. But yeah, so batten down the hatches for this one. This is about the fucking cook. Speaking of cooking, Nigel described the House of Black using three words each, and oh my god, he cooked, Charlie. Holy shit. Anyway, yeah, I guess I'll just get into the match. They sold their asses off. They made the match super fun to watch. Jesus, I can't speak today. Juice was going full loosey-juicy out there. I wish we could have seen this match in full, like without Buddy doing the thing, like if we had just let it loose. And maybe we're going to, and that's the idea, like we're setting up for it. But like we wanted to just like get some of the taste out there for people to see if they were interested in the story. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. Either way. But we didn't get to see like the full breadth of what this could be. Well, I still think they delivered a very fun and memorable one-year anniversary main event here. We even had Pac getting his payback on the boys. Because I actually think that if there was an injury, like a real injury, that's why they did that. I don't even know if that was a spot in the match. I mean, it could have been, but it didn't need to be there. And so maybe they were just like, yeah, no, just have him cost them the match that way.
My gut's telling me it was a spot.
It could be, 100%. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I just didn't know. So I just, you know, when I don't know, I don't. I'm not saying that I'm not really being worked. I'm just not sure because sometimes in AEW, they can cover it up pretty well. But at the same time, It could just be that they also take advantage of the fact that they've cut to the commercial to check on injuries before, and they use that against us sometimes. So, you know. But yeah, Pat got his payback. And then we got Buddy Matthews backstage getting assaulted by Christian Cage, which is a new wrinkle in the mix of this Bang Bang Gang stuff with the House of Black. So now there's another target on the back of the House of Black, which is kind of interesting. House of Black is now feuding with Christian Cage after they got beat by, well, yeah, beat by Adam Copeland or whatever. So, you know, like, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if what the deal is there, but maybe it's just coincidence, probably, more than likely. You know?
Probably coincidence, yeah.
But, you know, either way. Because it could have been that Christian was like, oh, he's gone. Because maybe they were going to do something more with
Possible. That 310 to Yuma was fucking nasty at the end of the match. Oh, that was a beauty.
Oh, yeah, bud. They fucking closed it out on him. Yeah, and I mentioned this to you offline, but there was this closing image of Rampage where it had Buddy Matthews with his injured knee beat down and having just been concertoed by Christian Cage, and then Luchasaurus lays the image of Christian Cage that he drew on across his battered body, and that's the last shot of the show. And I was just like, looking at this shot and I was like, this means something, and it does. You have Christian Cage, you have a beaten down, injured Buddy Matthews. You have the chairs, which are representative of the Thunder Rosa versus Ana Perrazzo, you know, plunder match. And you have just a screen that is just a image of just of destruction. Like, that was kind of like an encapsulation of the whole show, I think.
And think about where we are today as compared to where we were 8 weeks ago with the Trios titles. There's so many paths, so many moving parts, so many just – it feels important again. There's multiple people wanting the titles, big wrestlers wanting this championship. It's nice to see this title come full back around.
And, all right, if you had to describe AEW wrestlers as cuts of meat, I'm just going to give you three wrestlers. Will Ospreay is your first one. All right, what cut of meat is Will Ospreay?
The filet mignon.
Okay, fancy. Acquired taste. I like it. Okay, all right. Bryan Danielson?
Wagyu.
I was going to go with like some vegan like, you know, like Impossible Burger shit, but I'm with you. I'll let it rock, you know. And then the last one, Ricky Starks.
We'll go with a T-Bone.
Right? We are on the same page. That's exactly
what he's got it in him. Like, there's a part of the T-Bone that's some of the best shit. Yeah, but then, 100%. You know, we just don't always see it.
100%. So. No, it's not everybody's favorite. You don't always see it on the menu, but, you know, it's a great choice. And when you see it on the menu, you know that place is fire. Anyway, all right, so I just was random sidebar. I don't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah, but
we all know Brian Cage would be lab grown meat, of course.
He's the miracle meat. He's the kangaroo meat. You fucking.
He is the horse dewormer infected meat.
So next week, so far on Dynamite, we got MGF versus Rouge kicking the show off. We got an AEW tag team title eliminator, the Young Bucks versus the Acclaimed. Mark Briscoe, Kyle O'Reilly, Orange Cassidy, and Dante Martin versus Roderick Strong, Kyle Fletcher, Konosuke Takeshita, and Zack Sabre Jr.
What a fucking Tony Storm. What the fuck?
Tony Storm and Mina Shirakawa contract signing, and Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay face to face. Should be some good wrestling next week. Enjoy
the show. Coming face to face.
Amen. But thanks again for everyone for sticking around. If you're interested in more wrestling for us, hit that little follow button We really appreciate it and hope to catch you guys next week, because next week is the last week before Forbidden Door. So two pods next week. So look out for that.
And you know who's going to come through the Forbidden Door, Charlie, that you never expect?
Who's that?
Wardlow.
Wardlow, send us home, baby.